Today we started the sugya of Lav She'in B'maisa. If you missed it yesterday, don't worry, I'll catch you up. Lav She'in B'maisa, the Gemara says in the Maseches Makos, and this is why we're doing it, because it's in Maseches Makos, Dav Dalet Amud Beis, a machlokas tanayim, whether one gets malkus for Lav She'in B'maisa. Right, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that one does get malkus for Lav She'in B'maisa. The only reason you don't get malkus for, let's say, the Avera of Nosar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is because it's a Lav Anita Klasei. It's something that you can fix by doing a mitzvah sasei. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, Lav She'in B'maisa ain lokin alav. You don't get malkus for Lav She'in B'maisa. So we began to discuss yesterday, what's the svara? Why is it that you would not get malkus just because the Avera does not involve any action? Is there any logic as to why one would not get malkus when the Avera does not involve any action? So the svara we suggested yesterday was maybe Lav She'in B'maisa is not as severe of an Avera. It's a lower level Avera. Lav She'yesh B'maisa, you're doing an action that expresses a certain amount of rebellion, and that's therefore a much more severe Avera. But Lav She'in B'maisa, you're not doing anything. You're just sitting there and the meat's getting old and now it became Nosar. You didn't do anything, and therefore it's a less severe Avera. And we found significant support for that idea, that a Lav She'in B'maisa is a less severe Avera. We certainly found it in the Tumim, Rabbi Yonis Naibshitz, when he discusses who is Pasul Eidus. So Shulchan Aruch says, a Rasha is Pasul Eidus. What defines a Rasha? Someone who does an Avera for which you get Malkus, says Rabbi Yonis Naibshitz. And therefore, if you only violate a Lav She'in B'maisa, you're not Pasul Eidus, because it's a less severe Avera. Now, you could do Averas that you don't get Malkus for that are more severe, and then you will be Pasul Eidus. Alav Shenitin Lasvaras Mises Beisdin, you will get Malkus, you will be Pasul Eidus for, even though there's no Malkus, because that's more severe. But Alav Shein B'maisa is less severe. That was the Chiddush of the Tumim, and we saw that the Beis Yosef and the Knesset HaGedolah did not necessarily agree. Or at least, I don't know if the Beis Yosef and the Knesset HaGedolah did not necessarily agree. That others held that maybe a Lav She'ein B'maisa is no less severe than a Lav She'yesh B'maisa. Then we started to show that Rav Yosef Engel, in his famous piece on quantity and quality in mitzvos, also seems to work with the assumption that a Lav She'ein B'maisa is less severe than a Lav She'yesh B'maisa. We did one case where he spoke about where you have a person who finds himself, the Gemara in Erev and Daf Kuf, person finds himself in a tree on Shabbos. He's sitting in a tree on Shabbos. Every moment that he stays sitting in that tree is going to be in violation of an Isser. Is it better for him to actively climb out of that tree, or is it better for him to stay in that tree? So on the one hand, you would say, well, if he climbs out of that tree, he's actively violating an Avera. Whereas if he stays in the tree, he's only passively violating an Avera by just sitting there. On the other hand, if he stays in the tree, he's passively violating an Avera every second. Whereas if he climbs out of that tree, he's actively violating an Avera, but only right now, in the here and now, in one quick second. So that's the balance, that's the issue, Rav Yosef Engel explains, that on the one hand you have the less severe Avera of doing something passively, on the other hand you have the higher quantity of Averos of staying there and passively violating every second. So the fact that he frames it that way, that Rav Yosef Engel frames the debate in that way, shows you that he believes that which is inactive, that which is passive, is by definition more lenient than that which is active. Another example Rav Yosef Engel gave, based on a Tosfos B'Metzia, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara over there says that a sachir sha'avar zmanu, let's say a person works for a boss, and the boss didn't pay him. Money was due on the first of the month, and the money, the employee claims that the employer has not paid him his wages, hasn't paid him yet. But it's already way past the time that the wages were supposed to be paid. The Gemara says, Eino nishpa v'notel. The employee cannot just swear and get paid. Why? Because we have a chazaka that there's no way that the balabayis would have violated the isser of baltalin. There's an isser that you're not allowed to delay in paying your workers. Your worker does a job for you, pay him right away. You got to pay him up front. You're not allowed to just say, oh, I'll pay you tomorrow. No, you got to pay him right away. If someone does work for you, you have to pay them right away. It's an isser da'oraisa to not pay them on time. So we say that the employee cannot just say, I swear I didn't get paid, and then we'll believe him and get paid, because he's making a startlingly terrible accusation against the employer, that this employer violated Bal Talin. No, we have a chazaka that the employer did not violate Bal Talin. He's a cheskas kashrus. You want to get paid, employee? You got to bring a raya. It's not good enough to just take a shavua. So the Gemara says, wait a second, but if the employee is not going to get paid, right, then if we believe that the employer already paid him, then we're making a startling accusation against the employee. What are we accusing the employee of then? If we're saying we believe you got paid already, then he's trying to lie and steal. He's trying to say that the employer violated Lo Sigzal. He's trying to violate Lo Sigzal himself. He's trying to lie and steal. How can we say that the employee is not allowed to be Nishpa V'notel? He can't just swear and get paid, because why would we believe him that the employer violated Bal Talin? Yeah, but if you don't get him paid, then you're accusing the employee of violating the Tigzol, and he has a cheskas kashas also. Fractosos, what kind of kash is that? The Balabais also would be in violation of the Tigzol if he's keeping the money that he's not entitled to keep. Meaning, the reason the employee can't be Nishpa V'notel is that if the employee is lying, if he's lying, then he's accusing the Balabais of violating, or even if he's telling the truth, rather, he's accusing the Balabais of violating Bal Talin and Bal Tigzal. Because when you don't pay your employees, it's not only that you're violating Bal Talin and delaying the payment. If you don't pay them, you're stealing from them. Whereas the employee, if he's lying, is only violating Bal Tigzal. So why would the Gemara assume that those two are the same? Of course you would say, if we believe everyone has a cheskas kashrus, we like to believe every Jew is a kosher Jew, right? That's the nice assumption we'd like to have. Given that there's a debate whether this guy was paid or not, someone's not kosher over here. But if the employee is the one who's not kosher, he's only not kosher in one avera. If the employer is the one who's not kosher, he's not kosher in two averos. Why? If the employee is the one who's not kosher, what aver is he trying to do? Bal Tigzol, he's trying to steal. If the employer is the one who's not kosher, what's he trying to do? What two aver is he trying to do? Stealing and? And withholding money from workers. So says Tosfos, isn't it obvious then that if we'd like to assume a cheskas kashrus, it's better to assume that the employee is lying, because then he's only doing one avera, as opposed to assuming that the employer is lying, because then he's doing two averas? So says Rav Yosef Engel, no. The fact that the employer is doing two averas, but how's he doing those averas? By not paying. By being passive. How's the employee doing his aver of stealing? By trying to take the money, by being active. So that's the case over here. Yes, the employer would be doing two averos, but both of those averos would be passive. The employee would be doing one avera, but that one avera would be active. Says Rav Yosef Engel, here's quantity versus quality. Now, just setting it up that way, that this is quantity versus quality, tells you that Rav Yosef Engel thinks that being passive is a lesser avera than being active. That whenever you do something b'shevi al taseh, it's a lesser avera. And that's why the employer, while he's doing two averos, but they're lower level averos because they're passive. It happens to be that Tosfos assumes that even though they're lower level averos, but because there are two of them, it's worse than one active avera. And therefore, Tosfos assumes that kamus is machriya echos, that quantity beats quality. But just the way that Tosfos sets it up, the way that Rav Yosef Engel sets it up, as this is a case of quantity versus quality, tells you that he believes that the very same avera, when you do it passively, is a lesser avera than when you will do it actively. Very much in line with the Tumim. very much in line with the idea that the reason you don't get malchus for a lav shein bo maisa is that it's passive, and because it's passive, it's less severe than an act of avera. Yeah.
In this case, why do we think about like stealing or withholding money? Why don't we think about hamotzi mitzvah or lavarat? Why isn't that all with that the guy can't take the money?
Well, that's essentially what we're saying. Hamotzi mitzvah or lavarat. You can't be nishpa benotel. Because over here, everyone agrees that he did work for him. And that generates a chiyuv tashlumin. So there's definitely a chiyuv here. It's just a question, was the chiyuv paid? So it's a little bit more complicated than a regular case.
Isn't there also like a motzi shema kind of thing on the guy that was saying, on the guy that's trying to get the money?
Yeah, but that goes in both directions. Meaning whoever is wrong will be in both directions. So again, all I tried to show through Rav Yosef Engel is that he also works with this assumption that being passive is a lower level avera than actively violating avera. In general, how much money does one have to spend in order to do a mitzvah? If a mitzvah is very expensive, 1/5. What about in order to avoid violating an avera? How much money does one have to spend in order to avoid violating an avera? Everything, all he's got. What about an avera that would be violated passively? Would you have to give up all your money in order to avoid driving a car on Shabbos? I have to give up all my money. That's an active violation. In order to avoid eating chazer, I have to give up all my money. What about avoiding an avera that would be violated passively? A lav shein bo maisa. Would we say that a lav shein, I can hire someone to eat this carbon meat so that it won't become nosa. But it will cost me a lot of money to get someone to do that. How much money do you have to spend in order to avoid violating an avera passively? Now, if you're going to say, well, lav shein b'maisa, lav shein b'maisa, that's all losa, say, they're all very severe, they're all equally severe, well, then you'd have to spend all your money, just like any other lav. But if you say that a lav shein b'maisa is, by definition, less severe than a lav shein b'maisa, it's a notch down from a lav shein b'maisa, well, then maybe you have to spend all your money to avoid violating a lav shein b'maisa. But maybe a lav shein b'maisa is different. If you look at the Minchas Chinuch on the page that's labeled page 18 over here, in the packets that you have, in Os Tes, in Mitzvah Ches, Minchas Chinuch quotes from the Prima Gadim and the Mishnas Chachamim that this idea of not having to give up all your money for a mitzvah sasei, but for a mitzvah lo sasei, you do have to give up all your money. He says, "Lufiza belava ba mechlala say, Davi kasei ain't tzarich levazis kol imano." What if you have the opposite? What if you have something that you're not allowed to do, but the Torah said it in a positive way? It's a lava ba mechlala say, something that would be, if you would violate it, would be an active violation, but the Torah formulates it as a mitzvah sasei. Meaning, what he's struggling with is the following. When we say that there's a difference between how much money you spend for an assay and how much money you spend for a los assay, is that really accurate? Is there a difference between how much money you spend for a mitzvah assay versus a mitzvah los assay? Or is the difference something else? Maybe there's a difference between how much money you have to spend in order to avoid actively violating something, the Torah, versus how much money you have to spend in order to avoid passively violating the Torah. 99% of the time, a passive violation will mean that you're violating an asay. You're not putting on tzitzis, you're not eating matzah, you're not wearing tefillin, you're not... 99% of the time, that's an asay. 99% of the time, an active violation will mean you're violating a los asay. You're eating chazer, you're wearing shatnez. You're 99% of the time, active violation is a los asay. But maybe the din and how much money you have to spend doesn't really depend on whether it's a technical assay or a technical los assay. Maybe what it really depends on is, are you actively going to be in violation? If that's the case, you have to spend all your money to avoid actively violating. Or are you going to be passively violating? In which case, you don't have to spend more than 20% of your money. Again, the Minchas Chinuch works by raising this question, by formulating this question. He's working with the assumption that a passive violation is less severe than an active violation.
In which case would you have to use up all your money for passively not violating the site? Then, would you say that generally speaking, you generally passively violate los hases.
So we normally think, so you got to spend all your money to avoid violating los hases. No, maybe you only have to spend all your money to avoid actively violating anything in the Torah, whether it's an hase or a los hase. And you have to spend all your money to avoid passively violating things, whether they're hases or los hases. Meaning it's not about whether it's an hase or a los hase, it's about active versus passive.
Is there any case in which you're actively violating an hase?
Where you actively, any lava ba mechal hase. Anytime you have an example where the Torah formulates something in the positive, but it requires negative behavior. I'm just trying to think of what would be examples of that. Shabbos Shomer is a los hase, is lashon of los hase. Shomer Sim Shabbos Kashas. Yeah, but that's the mitzvah sase. It's an actual mitzvah sase. It's not a lava ba mechal hase. Google lava ba mechal hase. I'm sure it comes up several times in Shas. You'll find many examples. I'm just, for some reason, not thinking of any right now of lava ba mechal hase. But it does come up all over the place. One more unbelievable maramakam on this topic. I forgot to put it in the packet. Rav Elchanan Kovetz Ha'aros discusses the notion that we know the Gemara in Yevamos tells us Chum kavi oker davar min haTorah b'shev yal taaseh b'na pekum v'aseh. What does that mean? The rabbis have the right to tell you, don't do a mitzvah in the Torah, even though it's a clear mitzvah d'oraisa. What's the example of that? When do the rabbis ever tell us not to do a mitzvah d'oraisa? Shofar on Shabbos, lulav on Shabbos. First day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos. Midoraisa, we have a mitzvah to take lulav. Nachum say, don't do it. What if the Chum have a really, really good reason to tell me that I should start eating ham sandwiches for lunch every day? Do they have the right to tell me that? No, that's beyond their authority. They don't have the right to tell me that. That's what the Gemara says. The Rabbanan have the right to be oker davar min haTorah b'shev yal taaseh. They can tell me to passively sit still. Don't blow shofar today. Sit still. Don't take lulav today. But they do not have the right to tell me to actively violate any yisurim in the Torah. Says Rav Elchanan, I have three questions, three chakiros that I think you could raise about this rule, and I think they're all related to each other. And when we see how they're all related to each other, we'll see that it's all related to this idea also, whether Shevi Alta says, by definition, less severe than Kumbase, with the Lav Shein B'maisa is by definition less severe than Lav Sheish B'maisa. He says, I got three issues. First of all, are you familiar with the Sefer Kovetz Ha'aros? It's a little very different than Kovetz Shurim. Kovetz Shurim were Shurim that were written up by Talmidim of Rav Elchanan in Baranovich. After the war, they wrote up from their notes, so it's pretty easy to read. It's written in like short paragraphs, little pieces. A few contrasts that are a little bit longer. Very, very easy to read. Kovetz Ha'aros is Rav Elchanan's own Sefer that he wrote himself on the commentary of the Rashba in Maseches Yevamos. So it's difficult on many levels, because first of all, it's on Yevamos. Yevamos is one of the hardest Maseches in Shas, right? We say Mashiach is Ani Rochev Alachmar. Ani is Erev and Nida Yevamos. Mashiach will come when we're able to really learn those Maseches as well. And Yevamos is really, really hard. Not only that, it's not a commentary on Yevamos. It's a commentary on the Rashba in Yevamos. So first you got to learn Yevamos, then you got to learn the Rashba, then you learn Rav Elchanan. That's where he's got a lot of his most profound ideas in the Kovetz Ha'aros and Yevamos. So this one is not really so, you don't really have to know much about Yevamos or the Rashba in Yevamos to understand this piece in Rav Elchanan. We just have to know that one line, that Chachamim have the right to be Oka Davar Minatar B'Shevi Al Taaseh B'Nak B'Kum V'Aseh. And that's a rule that we're all well versed in. We know that we're not allowed to take, that Chachamim have the right to tell us not to blow shofar on Shabbos, not to take lulav on Shabbos. Good, we're all good with that. Chachamim don't have the right to tell me, to drive a car on Shabbos. Okay, I understand. So Chachamim says I have three chakiros, three issues to raise over here. Number one, he says, how do you define what's called kumva asay and what's called shevi al ta'aseh? That sounds like a silly question. What do you mean? Kumva asay is when I do something, shevi al ta'aseh is when I don't do something. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have two pieces of meat in front of you. Here's the recorder's one piece of meat, delicious. My watch is another piece of meat, right? I take a shvua, I will eat this piece of meat. On the condition that I eat this piece of meat first. So the recorder is now the shvua. It's the meat that I took a shvua about. The watch is the tanai. Meaning my shvua is not really about the watch. If I eat the watch, or the meat that's represented by this watch, then that triggers a chiyuv to eat the recorder. Right? Let's say I eat the watch, and then, so now what happened? If I eat the watch, what happens? What gets triggered? I have to eat the recorder, right? Let's say I eat the watch, and then I don't eat the recorder. Not going to eat it. Throw it away. Burn it. It's gone. Didn't eat it. I don't burn it. Whatever. I just don't eat it. I violated my shvua, right? Did I violate it actively or passively? So, just one second. The shvua itself is the recorder. I didn't eat the recorder. I did nothing with the recorder. That would be shevi al ta'aseh. That's passive. But I only violated that because I did the action of eating the watch. Had I not done the action of eating the watch, then I never would have violated the shvua, because the shvua was only triggered by eating the watch. Is that called kumvaseh or shevi al ta'aseh? The whole avera was triggered by an action. The actual avera was in action. Yeah. So you hear, that's how do we define kumvaseh and shevi al ta'aseh by the avera itself, or do we define it by the person? Did I do something? Did I not do something? If you define it by the avera, the avaras avera was done passively. But if you define it by the person, I had to do something in order to get that aver. I had to eat this in order to get that aver. Another example. There is an issur. Vayira panai reka. You're not allowed to go into the azara empty-handed. Without a carbon, without something to do. Without something to bring. What is the avera? The avera is being empty-handed. That's passive. That's in not having something. That's passive. But I'm empty-handed right now. I'm not violating the Avera. Why am I not violating the Avera? Because I'm not in the Azara. How do I get to the Azara? By walking in. Now, the Avera itself is passive. It's being empty-handed. But the only way to violate the Avera is by actively walking into the Azara. And then the fact that I'm empty-handed matters. Is that called that I violated actively? Or is that called that I violated passively? Do the Rabbanan have the right to tell me to eat this watch and not eat that recorder? Is that called an active violation of the Torah or a passive violation of the Torah? Do the Rabbanan have the right to tell me to go into the Azara empty-handed? Is that called an active violation, which the Rabbanan are not allowed to tell me to do? Or is that called a passive violation, which the Rabbanan are allowed to tell me to do? That is Chakira number one. Good? Chakira number two, and the genius of this piece in Rav Chaim is that he says these three Chakiras, and he says, and they all relate to each other. You can be able to draw two charts. 1, 2, 3 lines up with 1, 2, 3. Chakira number two is like this. When we say that we're oker davar min haTorah, the Rabbanan uproot a din d'oraisa, b'shevi al ta'aseh. Don't blow shofar on Shabbos. Does that mean that once the Rabbanan say that, there is no longer a mitzvah d'oraisa to blow shofar on Shabbos? Or does it mean, no, there's still a mitzvah d'oraisa to blow shofar on Shabbos. Of course there's a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Rabbanan can't get rid of a mitzvah d'oraisa. But I have to listen to the Chacham not to do that mitzvah d'oraisa, because the Torah gives them the right as long as they have a good reason for it, to tell me not to do a mitzvah d'oraisa. So when I don't blow shofar on Shabbos, is that because there doesn't exist a mitzvah d'oraisa to blow shofar on Shabbos? Or is it, no, there still exists a mitzvah d'oraisa to blow shofar on Shabbos. I just have to listen to the rabbis, and the rabbis are authorized to tell me not to blow shofar on Shabbos. A little bit about Tuchli and Huch, but this is not Asei Dochel Ozeh, this is the Rabbanan being Oker Dov Mera Torah. So, my Nafkamina, let's give the following Nafkamina. It's much, much better with a Nafkamina. Let's say, I blew Shofar on Shabbos. Did I get a mitzvah? If the mitzvah disappears because the Chum told me not to do it, so the mitzvah's gone, there's no mitzvah Doris, I did nothing. Not only did I not get a mitzvah, the brachas I said, bracha levatala. The next day, I better say Yeshechianu. Because I haven't done the mitzvah of shofar yet this year. Even if you hold, you only say Yeshechianu on the first day. If, however, you hold that the mitzvah is still there, it's just that I have an obligation to listen to the Rabbanan, but the mitzvah is still a mitzvah. My brachas were not a bracha levatala. I got the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar. I did the wrong thing by doing it, but I got the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar. And then the next day, I shouldn't say yeshachianu because I already got the mitzvah. Yeah.
Well, it can't be enough kamino if like whether or not you get the mitzvah, because nothing changes if you get the mitzvah or not.
It does though, because do I say yeshachianu the next?
Right. So you can get around that by saying, you get around by saying it's a different mitzvah because now it's like also derabbanan, and it's like a stronger mitzvah. Or is like if someone else pulls over.
I could hear such a taina, but Pashtus I think is not that way. The Pashtus is if you did the mitzvah of shofar already, you did the mitzvah of shofar already. Mitzvah d'oraisa, the brachas, the shachianos on the mitzvah d'oraisa. Or let's say someone else is blowing shofar on Shabbos. Is there any maila for me to go listen to it? Now I'm not. He's blown anyway. The guy, for whatever reason, is blowing it. And this was actually the maisa. Because there were people that held that in Yerushalayim, in the Era Atikah, they should blow shofar on Shabbos. Malkum Sheish Babez. So people did it for years. And that was a big shaila poskim dealt with. Is there any maila in attending such a tekiah? They're doing it anyway, whether I tell them to or not. So is there any maila in going? If the mitzvah's gone entirely, what am I going for? It's nothing. But if the mitzvah's still there, it's just that I have to listen to the rabbis. So maybe there's a maila to go. Maybe. That's chakira number two. Okay.
Our cases, I think there are cases in which you do it on your own, you do it on. However, it's not like you should know there are certain cases. You marry some of the esters, but there are some cases where it's foul.
Right. But if a Kohen marries a Grusha, they are married. The Gemara in Tzmura Davdalit asks that kasha. The Gemara in Tzmura Davdalit says, Kol Milsa Dav Machmana Lo Sabin, Yavad Lo Mahani. That whenever the Torah says you can't do something, it's not just telling you can't do it, that you're not permitted to do it, it's telling you that you're not able to make it work. Right? The Torah is not just telling you don't do it, the Torah is telling you you are incapable of doing it. Well then why are you capable of creating Kiddushin with a Grusha if you're a Kohen? So the Gemara asked Akasha. The Gemara says special drasha, we have special drasha about a Kohen and a Grusha.
If you go to the Yerat and the Shofar blowing in so it's like Shemakta on it, right? So, and let's say that they are violating the Avera, right? In the end, like, it's really an Avera. Then could it be like you're violating the Avera yourself?
I don't think so. I don't think it works that way. It's like Shlichus Dvar Avera almost. I don't think it works that way. Because you're not the one that's doing the Maisa is. Third Chakira. Suggests as follows. Why is there a difference between Shevi Altasa and Kumbasai? One possibility, he says, is that the Rabbanan are able to tell you to violate B'Shevi Altasa because it's not such a bad violation if it's B'Shevi Altasa. It's not as severe, like we've been saying the whole time. Kumbasai, oh, that's severe. They're not authorized to tell you to do that. The Rabbanan may be authorized to tell you to violate B'Shevi Altasa because the Rabbanan are authorized to tell you to do little Averos. But to tell you to violate B'kumba, say the Rabbanan are not authorized to tell you to do big Averos. That's one way of understanding the difference between Shevi Altasa and B'kumba, say. And that's probably what we would have assumed, no? That's the difference between Shevi Altasa and B'kumba, say. That Shevi Altasa is not as bad. Or he says, maybe no. Maybe Shevi Al Taseh is every bit as bad as Kumvaseh. Lav She'in Bo Maiseh, every bit as bad as the Lav She'esh Bo Maiseh. Every bit as Chamud. You know what the difference in Shevi Al Taseh and Kumvaseh is? Nothing. Here's why it plays out differently. The Torah says, blow shofar on Shabbos. The Rabbanan say, the Torah also says, listen to the rabbis, who, by the way, told you not to blow shofar on Shabbos. Oh God, what do I do now? Torah, you told me to blow shofar on Shabbos. Torah, you told me to listen to the rabbis not to blow shofar on Shabbos. What am I to do? And the answer is, what am I to do? Nothing. You can't make that decision. So you just have to sit still and do nothing. Maybe that's why we say the Rabbanan are Oker Dover Min HaTorah B'Shevi Al Taseh. The Rabbanan aren't really Oker Dover Min HaTorah at all. But they're telling me to do something that's against the Torah, and that creates a Din D'Oraisa to do what they say. So I don't know what to do, because I have the Torah telling me one thing, and then the Torah telling me to listen to the rabbis who are telling me another thing. I don't know what to do. So sit still. But if the Rabbanan tell me, eat chazer, and the Torah tells me, don't eat chazer, I'm stuck in the same predicament. I have a Torah telling me not to eat chazer, a Torah telling me, listen to the rabbis who tell you to, yes, eat chazer, what do I do? And what's the answer? What do? Nothing. Don't eat the chazer, which means the Rabbanan lose in that case. Why do they lose? Not because they really lose, but because we just don't know. You're stuck. You're in this predicament, so you just got to sit there and do nothing. But it's not that the Torah overpowered the rabbis or the rabbis overpowered the Torah. No, Shevi Al Taseh and Kumaseh are exactly the same level of severity in terms of the Isurim of Shevi Al Taseh and the Isurim of Kumaseh. It's just that when I'm stuck like that, I have to just sit there and do nothing. Maybe that's the Vart. Says Rav Elchanan, all three Chakiros are answered with each other. Take the second Chakira as your starting point. What was the second Chakira? When the Rabbanan or Oker Dover Min HaTorah, does the Avera go away? Is the Din D'Oraisa go away? The Mitzvah go away? Or is it still there? It's just say you're allowed to violate it. If you assume the Mitzvah goes away, that the Rabbanan are authorized to take Tkiyas Shofar and say it doesn't exist, there is no way that the Rabbanan can do that on every Din in the Torah. It has to be a very low-level din. If the Rabbanan are going to be authorized to make a din not exist, it must be a low-level din. It must be a very kal din, something that's very not severe. And therefore you must hold that Shevi Al Taseh, by definition, is less severe than Kumvaseh, Chakira number 3. Shevi Al Taseh, by definition, is less severe than Kumvaseh. That's why the Rabban can tell you to violate. As far as the first Chakira, the Rabbanan have the right to tell you that we're going to get rid of these very small Averos. What defines a small Avera? An Avera that's Shevi Al Taseh, that's violated by Shevi Al Taseh. You look at the Avera itself. You don't look at the behavior of the person. It has nothing to do with the person. It has to do with the nature of the Avera. That it's Chakira number one. That eating this recorder, not eating this recorder, is Shevi Al Taseh. It's passive. That makes it a very tiny Avera. And that the Rabbanan are allowed to get rid of. If you start Chakira number two on the other side, though, we'll come out with the exact opposite conclusions. If you start Chakira number two by saying that the Rabbanan do not have the right to get rid of any Yisr in the Torah, the Yisr still exists, it's there the whole time, well then you're going to say that maybe every Yisr is the same. The Rabbanan can't overpower Yisurim. What they have the right to do is create their own Chiyuvim, which the Torah demands that you listen to, but they can't get rid of Yisurim. And then in Chakira number 3, what are you going to say? That the reason the Chum Maroka Dov Minator B'Shevi Al Taseh is not because Shevi Al Taseh is less severe than Kumvaseh. The Rabban can't uproot any of those things. You know why you can be Oka Dov Minator B'Shevi Al Taseh is because the predicament that's created when you have the Torah telling you to blow shofar and the Torah telling you to listen to the rabbis not to blow shofar is one that you have to respond to by doing nothing. the predicament that's created when you have the Torah telling you not to eat chazer and the Torah telling you listen to the rabbis to eat chazer is by doing nothing. Because the rabbanim don't have the right to be ochre anything. The din of the Torah is still there the whole time. So it's just a matter of placing you in a predicament where you're going to have to do nothing. And then going back to Chakira number one, if the whole idea is that the Rabbanan have the ability to create this impossible situation where I have to freeze, if the way to violate the Avera is passive on the Avera but active on eating this watch, well, that's not freezing. The Rabbanan create a predicament where I have to, it's not about the Isser, it's about me. The Isser is just as severe as an Isser B'kum Va'aseh. Isserim are all the same. They're all of equal severity. But the Rabbanan have the right to put me in a situation where I'm frozen. I can't do anything. And therefore, if eating this watch is active, that means I violated actively. Requires a little chazara. Kovitzara Simon Samachtes, worth the chazara. It's a brilliant, brilliant Rav Chaim.